You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Ironcast, and we're recording this in a brand new venue for us, the Bowling, right by Upton Park. Ginge, you were telling me just beforehand that you would come in here after a game in which you'd played well with your old man just to scoop some free beers.
Yeah, not like I said, I'd only come in if I'd played all right and we'd won the game. But yeah, just an iconic place for West Ham. Certainly my time, my first time at West Ham. You know, driving in on the bus or driving in your car, passing the pub and seeing all the fans outside. Just an iconic place, and a place for me personally where I've got my fondest memories. This area, these streets around the old Upton Park and this pub.
Yeah. This is my first time in here since the Swansea game, which was the penultimate game at Upton Park. And it's had a revamp in here. It looks different. It looks better than it did, but you can still feel like the ghosts of this pub. It's atmospheric,
it's
isn't it?
It's a proper East End boozer, isn't it? That's all you can describe. It stinks to me, by the way. This is, if I could have a pub and it be my own, this would be it, I think. It's perfect.
And also, if you go into the back dining room, there's mirrors with like iconic West Ham players in there, especially from the 60s, 70s, 80s. Sir Trevor Brooking, Jeff Hurst. And you can just feel the history, can't you?
You can, and it's lovely because, you know, like I said, the area has changed. There's no doubt about it. You know, we've moved on, you know, for the better for the football club. But this pub in particular, you know, it's iconic for West Ham fans, and the way they've kept it, you know, the West Ham stuff that's about and the way the pub is now. It's great to see.
Is this the first time you've come back to Upton Park since?
This is the first time I've been in the area since the Man United game. Oh. It is today. Driving in and seeing all the old shops and Green Street, Barking Road, all that. It's the first time I've been back, which is a shame, really. And it's a bit poor for me because, like I said, my you know, best football memories are around this area.
I know. I was actually chatting to Ray Stewart not so long ago, and he said he lives up in Scotland, but if he's down in East London, he'll come and he'll just walk the streets of Upton Park.
Yeah.
Thought, oh, so romantic,
pop,
isn't it?
Pop into the pub.
So we've got Ricardo Vasse on this week's episode, and this is a great episode, Ricardo. I mean, the impact he had on West Ham, you can't understate it.
No, you can't. Obviously, you know, Ricardo's a great lad, great player for West Ham. Obviously, all West Ham fans will want to speak to him or know about the goal against Blackpool in the playoff final because, you know, ultimately, you know, who's to say our club, West Ham, wouldn't have gone on to where they are if Vaz hadn't scored that goal. So it's going to be a great episode. And like I say, it's such a great lad, such a good professional. He had a few injury problems, which he'll say about himself, but he worked ever so hard and was a pleasure to be around.
Yeah. All right, here he comes on Ironcast, live from the Bowling Tavern. It's Ricardo Vasse. Talking about fond memories, talking about nostalgia, we're here with the playoff final trophy 2012. And even better than that, the man who delivered it to West Ham fans everywhere, took us on this path to Premier League glory that we've been on ever since. Welcome back to East London. Welcome back to West Ham. Welcome to Ironcast, Ricardo Vasse.
Thank you. Cheers.
A modern day hero. And modern day West Ham hero.
I know, modern
getting
day.
Us to where we are today, Vaz. No,
61 games for West Ham in all competitions and 19 goals. But one of those goals is a goal that any West Ham fan who was alive for it will be talking about till their dying day. The last minute winner against Blackpool in the 2012 Championship playoff final to take us back to the promised land. those that celebrations. I was lucky enough to be there at Wembley. I know, Ginger, you're on Matt Everton's stag do. West Ham fans were going insane within Wembley. You've seen the footage of West Ham fans everywhere celebrating that goal. But the way you celebrated that goal, the top came off, the abs, the six-pack. You're
he's
just
gone,
looking
no.
at the,
it's
the
gone, mo- no, John. I can tell looking at you, it's not gone.
He's gone, no,
the mohawk, and you're just screaming. It's such an iconic photo. What better way to start this interview than to ask you, what was it like to score that last minute winner in a game of that importance?
For me, it was even more than obviously that day for me was the culmination of all the previous, I'd probably say 3 years or maybe four, because leaving Bolton was really hard. For the last 3 years of my contract, I was just injured, and then I struggled to get clubs after. So I went to Greece, coming back to UK was tough. I had to go through Scotland, 4 months, and then I had to go to Barnsley, and I had to do a trial, 2 weeks trial, and then finally signed. It was tough as well. So then to get from Barnsley to West Ham, this humongous team, obviously, history and all that. And then to get to that moment and be the one, the privileged one to score that goal, it was, and people don't know this. And after the game, obviously, while you're in the game, you focus and all that. But after the game, we did you get the trophy, the medal and all that, and you take a photo, we take a group photo. And after that, I just run to the dressing room and I just cried, because, and then it sunk in, like all the struggles to then get to that glory until today. I'm kind of in West Ham world, I'm well known because of that goal. So from losing everything to gaining so much more
As in you cried because of the journey you had been on?
Yeah,
and the magnitude of the occasion.
Yeah, because years before I should have retired because my knee was no good, and every club I went to literally tell me no chance. Even at West Ham I had my fair share of injuries, but the staff really managed me well. Rolsey at the time, I don't know if you caught Rolsey. Rolsey at the time, and Taka
the magician.
Yeah, so they managed me really well to then provide, to culminate to that moment. For me, was the goal was special and all that. It was just what it means for me. For me, it meant so much more. It meant I got my life back, and
so much more. What did the player? What did your teammates say when they came into the dressing room and you're there?
They didn't see me because it took probably another 15, 20 minutes of them doing the lap, celebrating, the fans, the craziness. They didn't see me. I think it was only one person in that dressing room. I didn't really know. I think it's like a security person that makes sure nobody comes in, nobody goes out. And he didn't see me. He just saw me coming in. And I went to the, obviously I didn't want to cry in front of him. I just went to the bathroom. I just cried there. I just cried there the whole time. Yeah. So by the time the boys came in, I think it was 20 minutes, half an hour. Nobody saw me. A lot of time they thought I was arrogant, big time. I didn't celebrate with the boys or something. Yeah, it was just too much, too overwhelming. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. Do you think, how often do you think about that goal? Once a week?
No, I don't really think very much. I'll be lying to say I do. I don't think of it. I get reminded time to time. And I'm grateful for it. I'm so grateful. And I got to think about that yesterday, going to the game, thinking how a lot of players, they play all their life, all their career, trying to be remembered, trying to be stay iconic, stay relevant. And West Ham does this for me. And I didn't ask. I'm not seeking it. Yet every year, they remind even the new generation what I did so many years ago. So I'm ought to be grateful.
Do you have a picture of it in your house?
No, not at all. My wife, when I was living here, she framed the celebration, the vanity celebration, I call it these days. But I don't know where that picture is, to be honest. Yeah. I moved, obviously, from London to Lisbon. She's like, where's that picture? I said, I don't know. I have nothing to do with it.
Do you know, when you look back at that, obviously, like you say, it was a very emotional time for you. Do you feel like you missed out on the celebrations a bit? Would you go back and change that? Would you be up with the pitch with the boys?
I wish I held it more. I wish I was better prepared so I could contain the emotion. So, yeah, of course, do the lap. Like I watch people winning even now, like when they became champions of Europe. So it was nice. You look at the photos, you look at the moments, it's nice. But at that moment, I couldn't hold it. I did the interview with Tomo right after the game. The game finished, we did the interview, and then it was still hectic. So I couldn't really digest anything. So, and then we gone up, we got the trophy, we got the medals. It was when we came down. So when we came down, and then it hit me, boom. So I had to flee. I wish I just cried on the pitch, to be honest. That probably would be better. But yeah, I wish.
Good photos.
Yeah.
I watched the game back recently. Every now and again, it's replayed on Sky, and I watched it back. And in that game, you had a few chances to score.
We did.
You specifically had a couple.
I should have. I reckon I counted at least two that I would have buried normally. Yeah, but he went inches here, inches there. But second half turned completely on us. Yeah, I think we're talking about it today. Because of the drama that it was, we expect to beat Blackpool easily. I mean, through the season, four here, four there. There we did it with 10 men. So we got to the final, like, Blackpool, we're going to just dismiss them. But as the game went on, the nerves kick in. I mean, the whole stadium was West Ham. So the boots was getting heavier, the sweat was getting heavier. Yeah. So you can see the players are getting anxious. And then they scored 1-1. The game turned completely. They should have scored a few times in the second half. And so you could see the tension. And then it culminated to that. I always compare the moments or the emotions to like when City won because it was that year when City first became champion. They were losing and then they got to draw. And then in the last minute, I was watching that game. I fell off my chair. I'm not a City fan, but because of the moment, because of the, you became an underdog and then you came back. And then, so
I think any last goal causes that, don't they? But to do it in a, you know, it's probably the biggest game in football, isn't it? They say, you know, for financially and what it means to football clubs coming up from the Championship to score a last minute winner in a game like that. Sam, if I did it, excuse me, I wouldn't be taking my top off. But don't quite look like you, mate.
We're going to get into your West Ham career, Ricardo, but just as we were sitting down, you mentioned that you and Ginger once got in a bit of a scrap. What's the story here? To give us your version of events, Ricardo. You go first. You're the guest.
I remember it. Yeah. I do remember it.
Ginger is an amazing guy. We always got on and always a role model. But in football, I think this is very common. We get frustrated. It's too many emotion. And in this particular incident, Ginger was frustrated because he wasn't in the starting 11 and he felt justified to be in the starting 11. And I think rightly so, actually. I actually agree with you then. But obviously, we're doing the training. We were separated from the main, the starting 11. So the non-starters has to do a side training to do more, obviously. And Ginge was just, he was just acting out.
You acting up?
And, yeah, a little
and,
bit.
And I was, a little bit. I was also upset, not to swear here. I was also acting out, but probably worse than him. And I felt also justified why I wasn't on the starting 11. So through that, I think he had enough of my acting out and then he came for me. So
did I come for you?
Yeah. But we didn't lock on.
I remember it. Vaz is bang on. I think we both probably deserve to be playing. The team maybe, you know, did well the week before.
I didn't so much, but yeah.
So Sam used to take the starting 11 on a Friday possibly.
Yeah, it was Friday. Yeah.
To do his shape, basically, is 1 to 11. They run through patterns of play, blah, blah, blah. So us other boys who weren't in the starting 11 would go over and train with Ian Hendon, I think, on the other pitch. So I think I'm playing. I think I should be playing. Vaz obviously thinks he should be playing. So I was playing up a little bit. Vaz was probably not as bad as me.
And yeah, I was terrible.
We didn't come to blows though. It was only.
You called me some names. Yeah. And I called you some names. Yeah. You like, what? And I think I chickened it out. And like,
I think we had a cuddle or shook hands after and it was all good. But there's another story about that session. I was angry and I was trying to kick It sounds bad saying, but I was sort of like disrupting the session, really, wasn't I? Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah. But I was trying to kick the ball out of play, like pinging it everywhere. But I think it was probably the best training session of my life. Every time I was trying to kick it out of play, it was going to one of my players. And it was, I was like Beckenbauer for that session.
It was unreal. That's what made me look worse because I was doing it and it was actually coming off of there. You're like, what are you doing? And all sorts. Yeah.
It's not my proudest moment, I'll be honest. I was just frustrated not to be playing. But I would say about Ricardo, not just because he sat here, but you know, would it be fair to say you probably didn't play as much the second season under Sam? But I would say your training and the way you were in the gym and the way you looked after yourself, I think you'd be up there for me, mate, as in professionalism, the way you handled yourself around the training ground. The way you trained, the way you spoke to people, the way you were around the training ground, it was magnificent to see.
Thank you.
Yeah, so let's talk about when you first joined West Ham, because it's the 11-12 season. You started with Barnsley, as you touched on there. Mm. You had a bit of a storied career to get to West Ham, but you started at Bolton for a bit. Would you have crossed paths with Big Sam back then?
Yeah, Sam, I signed for the academy. I went on trial, a day trial. I played a game and the academy director signed me straight away on 4-year deal. And this trial? Yeah.
How good were you on that day?
What did you do on that day?
Yeah, basically, do you want to hear that story?
Yeah.
For me, every story is mine is boring. So that's okay. So basically, I was playing U18 in Portugal for a team down south in Faro, called Forense, and I was 15, became 16, and then an agent or a scout saw me, and he put a video, he filmed one game, sent it to the main agent that had a relationship with Bolton, and they agreed for me to come on a trial, but it was a 1-day trial, which is just a game. So I arrived, let's say, you know, on a Monday, slept, wake up the next day, showed up at the stadium, put my boots on, which wasn't even mine, it was borrowed, and then turn up at the game and scored an hat trick.
They took me
They took me to the hotel, which is the Vier, which was straight upstairs, and they wouldn't let me leave. I had to sign, so they put 4-year deal on in front of me, which I didn't know English, didn't know anything. Yeah. My mother didn't know English, so we signed the 4-year deal, and then I had a week to go back, gather my stuff, which wasn't much, and then report. That's to U19, being 16 at the time, summer, I think 2003. So I arrived with U19. We did the preseason, a lot of running, mamma mia. And then the season start. For the first 3-4 game, I scored 2 goals, 3 goals, 4 goals, 3 goals. So I went straight to the first team. So they put me straight. But at the time, we had a B team as well. Mm. But I jumped out, went straight to the first team. So Sam Allardyce was the manager at the time. So he's the one who actually put me in the first team.
Wow.
Yeah, that's true. He was the one. I think if I look back, Sam just mismanaged me. When I look back, he mismanaged me because he didn't understand my emotion. He put psychologists on me and all that. And I normally speak my mind. Because I come from the streets, you just say it as it is, whatever, and deal with the consequences. He tried to manage me, like putting me on, and like I'll come on one game and the next game he won't put me on. He will leave me in the stand, like to teach me something. I just couldn't read between those lines, so I just grew more frustrated. But yeah, Sam Allardyce is the one who put me in the first team. I made my debut 17 at Old Trafford.
Wow. Yeah,
dribbling, Roy Keane, Gabriel Hines, Nutmeg, yeah, all sorts. Yeah, no problem.
No problem.
I had knee back then. My knee was fine.
Your knee was hard.
Yeah. No, it was all Sam. It was all Sam. So I had 4 years with Sam, and then Sam left to Newcastle. And that's when my injuries started under Sammy Lee, short-lived.
So what was the nature of that injury then? You mentioned your knee a few times. Was there one incident where you...
Yeah, it started when I was in Portugal. I literally sat on my right knee and damaged my meniscus. And
just sitting down?
No, we were doing this exercise, basically running, and whenever the coach clapped, silly exercise. We squat down like fully and then go up, jump. So he clapped. As I went to sit down, my left foot went off and I just banged on my right. And my meniscus just snapped. little bit. But I still came back and played the season, no problem. I actually meant to make my debut against Fulham. So I was in the squad. This is a Friday. We trained Thursday. I was in the squad, still 16 at the time. And then I gone home. Money went crazy. I report on Friday in the squad, all everybody in my U19 is like, oh, because I used to change with still with the U19. They're like, oh, you in the squad. I didn't see. I don't know. You have to be, you have to see your name on the list. Back in the days, that's how it was, right? Yeah. The list comes out, you go and check. And they're like, oh, you in the squad. No, no, no. I'm like, what squad? I don't speak English. So, and then, oh, you first team, all this. And, I went in and got the first operation that day. So and then that delayed things. And then I only made my debut. I came on against Middlesbrough away with Bolo Zenden and all these players. And then Boxing Day, I made my full debut at Old Trafford. Yeah. Wow. And that's when my injuries started. And then the following year, we went on preseason in Portugal. And then my knee locked. They had to remove like 80% of my meniscus, and then my real problem started. But it was biomechanics. I have a shortage. My right leg is about this much short than my left leg. I didn't know that.
Wow.
Yeah. That's why I had so many injuries with my knee. Yeah.
Wow. God, man. And so all those injuries before your West Ham career, like really, really got going. But it's interesting, when you signed for us in January of 2012, you'd had half a season with Barnsley, and had already scored 10 goals for Barnsley before you came to West Ham. Yeah. So did you feel like you were just in the best form of your life at that point? Was that season the one where it all started to come together?
I don't know about the best form, but I was definitely more mature. Yeah, I was definitely more mature. I've been through so much. I was more grateful, I would say, probably that, because I was such a brat. I became a brat later on as well. Kev probably can say that. He knows me. He knows me so long. And Ginge probably saw
some. No, I didn't see it.
He saw some of that as well.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Being at the dinner table with my headsets on. You know, remember these? Against Stoke?
You did do a few strange things. I'd say that.
Yeah.
You're still the only person I've seen to do press-ups in the dressing room before a game.
That's one.
You used to like that, didn't you? Yeah. I'd never seen it. Yeah. Press-ups. Yeah. It's like a warm-up in the dressing room.
Just get the blood
pumping. It's an activation,
yeah. To be fair. Yeah. The shape of him.
We've all seen the picture.
That's why you do it, but it was a new one on me, and I don't think I've seen it since.
No, I still teach that. I teach that in some of my boys that it's just activation. Yeah. So you get the blood pumping, and when you actually go to the gym, you want to get contact, so you're not afraid anymore. I do it more mentally. Yeah, it triggers things. Mm. Yeah, now I forget where I was. So, what you ask me again?
Yeah, like that half a season you had at Barnsley scoring 10 goals.
Oh, my
And then
best
you come to
form,
West Ham, and then you score another 10. So it's 20 goals in a season, basically.
I was more mature. I had a clear goal in line. I was focused. I was determined to not look back. I knew I knew what happened to me. I knew how unappreciative, how ungrateful, how annoying I was. So I wanted to leave all that behind. I wanted to maximize in this gift that I've been given, which is to play football, because it's a gift, man. So that's what that was.
So is it like the mental side of your game just kind of came together a bit more that year?
Definitely. Yeah. Because all my life, until the injuries, the bad ones, which was 8, 19, 20, that stopped me for 3. Before that, things is just easy. I was 12 playing with 18s in the street, like nothing. Because I have older brothers and I'll just dribble them. They'll kick me out, get up. So even when, I remember when we came and play here, I was at Barnsley, came and play here. I think it was Kev that told Julien Faubert, because Julien Faubert doesn't know me. He told, you got to threaten him. Because Kev used to do that a Bolton with Nicky Hunt. I don't know if you know. You remember Nicky Hunt? Yeah. A right back. Yeah. So in training, it would be like, when I get to the first thing, like, I'm going to break your leg. I was like, oh, man, you're playing music to my ears. Now I'm going to dribble you. Do you know what I mean? So the more you threaten me, the better, because in the hood, it's like that. Like, you know. So everything is just easy. Everything is just okay. It's just natural. Obviously, going through the injuries, losing it all, being depressed, gambling, owing people money, being broke, you name it, being rejected, all that plays a toll. All that takes a part. It shapes your mind. You cannot not shape your mind. So to get up from that, losing friends or people you think they were your friends, being this, places you used to go that be like open doors now, it's like, who are you? To deal with all that, and then to be able to come and have the opportunity to play again, to be paid.
All right, West Ham fans, one way you can support Ironcast and help us rocket up the charts and beat off the competition from other official football clubs podcasts like Chelsea and like Spurs is to get a 5-star rating or review from you. Support me and Ginger on the podcast, chuck us a 5-star rating review and help us rocket up the charts where West Ham belong, at the top of the table. Back on with the show.
Do you think the dressing room you went into, Vaz, at that time helped? You know, you had Big Cat, Kev Nolan. I know you're close with Joey O'Brien. Yeah. It was a good dressing room, wasn't it?
Yeah, very good. I think dressing room always helps, you know, how they embrace you, basically. If I'm honest, it didn't really matter to me, the dressing room. Like, I didn't sign for West Ham, and I had options then. And I didn't sign for West Ham because it was Sam Allardyce. In fact, I knew what I was walking into. That helped a lot. I didn't sign because I know Kev, I'm cool Kev. I didn't sign because Joey was one of my best mates. Not at all. I signed because it was the right move career-wise. I remember Southampton was fighting as well, and one of their players called me and all that. I chose West Ham and had a clear lines. So, and I didn't really socialize much. If you ask Kev, and Kev invited me for like, oh, come on, let's have some, you know, after the game or in the times we off to have some drinks, nobs. And they would tell you I didn't socialize. But I didn't socialize not because I didn't want to. It's because I was focused. I had a job to do, and I can't sleep anymore. I can't, because when I was at Barnsley, I literally train and go home. And when we had a day off, I'll travel to Bolton because at the time I was dating a girl from Bolton. So the only time I'll go to Bolton was Tuesday after training, and then Wednesday morning, I'll travel back. And we're talking an hour or so journey. So I could have literally stayed at Bolton. But no, I lived in Barnsley. They got me a flat in Barnsley next to the stadium. So I literally lived there. And that was my focus. So when I came here, I just kept that structure because I didn't want to disrupt it. And I lost a contract because of that. Because when I came to West Ham, West Ham was kind of top of the table. So with the bonus and all that. You know, we bonus are great, you know, they can almost make you not touch your salary. And then I accept all that. So I stay driven on that. But if you go look back, I miss maybe 2-3 weeks with an hamstring. I pulled my hamstring in the game here against Doncaster. I scored one of the fastest goal, and they got disallowed because they called foul.
I remember that.
Yeah.
So, should never have been disallowed.
Yeah, because I just, anyway. So I missed 2 weeks. And in those 2 weeks, West Ham couldn't win. They couldn't get a result. And that affected the table. We dropped from the top positions. So, and then to get back, and then your Reading was flying. Mm-mm. Reading come and nicked in. So by this time, we're third. We're trying to get to the second. So, and then we found out we're going to playoff. Playoff is the distance between the third and the fourth, the fifth. It was like 10 points.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter anymore. And then we got Cardiff. Cardiff was doing well. So they panic and they proposed me a new contract. Because when I came to West Ham, I signed 2 year plus, 2.5 plus option, something like that. And they proposed me a new contract. And my answer was, let's not talk about it now, because this is during the playoff. And I was getting injected and stuff because my knee was, I mean, it was my proper season. The championship is too demanding. So I'm like, let's not talk about it now. After the season, let's talk about it because I don't want to get distracted. we got there. Obviously, we got promoted. That's where my problem with Sam started. We come to preseason, and I sit to talk about, okay, let's... No, you got to prove it. You got to prove you. So, yeah, like you see, you see your face?
Yeah.
That was my face. Like,
yeah, of course.
You're talking about proving, walking into 70-odd thousand and do that. Not only that, that was probably easy. The Wembley was easy. The hardest thing is play here, Upton Park, when things are not going well. That, Ginge, that you know that. Yeah, that's the hardest thing. So for him to tell me you got to prove it, yeah, it just threw me off. My fight with Sam started there.
Did you? Is that where you fell out? No, I don't want to say fell out. But
yeah, no, fell out. But
no.
My misbehave or my arrogance, my anger lit up there.
From
because
that.
I was expecting somebody that will embrace me because I did that. I could have taken advantage of the club because the club knew I was the main guy producing in that squad. West Ham had to go up. They had to go.
Had
there was
to.
No other choice. Otherwise, everybody would be sacked. Literally, the pressure was too high. I remember playing here against, who was he against? We played against Reading here.
Oh,
players didn't want the ball, Ginge. You know when these fans turn on you, like when we came and played against Barnsley, we played here. Our tactic was, let's keep the score 0-0 for as long as possible because the fans will turn on them. That was our tactic. You see that?
That season, we got 13 away wins, which is a record for a West Ham season.
That tells you something.
And I was going to ask about that because Upton Park, I mean, as a fan, of course, when they're a lot of time, it puts a lot of pressure on
pressure.
The players.
It's a pressure.
Especially in the Championship where you're essentially expected to win.
You're the main contender, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So
I'd love that, though.
Yeah.
I'd like,
but not everybody does.
Not everyone does. No, exactly. That's what I was going to say. That's why every footballer is different, I suppose.
And you get booed.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. But that sort of, I think I played my best games
under that
when that pressure was on. Yeah. When they were like, say you went away to someone not so good. I don't think I was quite on it. And I used to make some.
You need that provocation.
I need that fear almost to perform.
Yeah.
And like you say, not every player
is the
same.
That's 1%, Ginge. That 1%.
Yeah,
the here was tough. So yeah, I remember saying this to Sam. Okay, I need to look for my future elsewhere. I said this to Sam, and he went and got Jarvis that summer. And Jarvis took, because I operate left to in. And Jarvis came and took my position then. He put Jarvis, because Jarvis operates on the left.
Yeah.
Doesn't really operate on the right. So and then I have to adapt again all over. So I had to go to the right. And then in January, he went and brought Joe Cole. So now I have to fight with Joe Cole. That's how he was the whole time. So, and then the following season, he went and got more players, putting me aside. So he made his position clear, but it was my fault because I locked horns straight away. I shouldn't have done that. That wasn't the right way, but I felt frustrated at the time. I didn't know how to channel it.
Yeah, but you were only backing yourself as a player though. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? As in, you were... I think you were right to say what you said leading up to such a big game or the playoffs. So
I still hold it that I did the right thing because I knew if I involved in that contract talks, I would be disrupted. I knew because I was already under pressure with my knee because I didn't meant to play the playoff. I didn't at all. I didn't first game. The second game I could have played and that was fine. But the first game in Cardiff, I didn't train that week with my knee. I couldn't. I was begging for a steroid injection, but they didn't want to give it to me. Rossi was afraid. Everybody was afraid. And I said, I'm not going to play unless I get the steroid. It's the only thing that works. But they wanted to give me the Duralane, the fluid thing. And I can't take the, because when I take the fluid thing, my knee starts locking. And I said, nah, just give me the steroid. I know myself. Give me the steroid. So I got the steroid. Imagine the game is like, let's say a Saturday. So I got the steroid on a Wednesday and I only trained on a Friday before the game. And that was in Cardiff. And then to turn up at the game. And the two goals of Jack Collison came from me. So do you know what I mean? So and then by the time we came here, I was in full flow because the injection, because you played the week later, the injection takes form already, and I was in full flow, and obviously we demolished them, we killed them here. So
yeah.
So things like this. So I had all this pressure because the club is telling me, oh, you gotta play. No, I can't. I'm struggling. Please give me something. So and then to think about contract, like, let's just get through this and then we can talk about it. But once we got promoted, oh, everybody's a Premier League star now. I meant nothing. Let's postpone your talk. And that's how they treat me. So that's why I acted out. And eventually I came around. Eventually I was like, you know what? Head down. I'm okay. I'm going to show this guy again.
Did you speak to Joey?
No. In moments like this, nobody knows this story.
No, yeah.
Only
yeah,
my
yeah.
agent knows this story and my wife and people that, you know.
Both.
And then we start the season. The best star at that time, look, obviously now West Ham is in a different panorama altogether, but that was one of the best West Ham start that season.
Did sign me that year.
Yeah, true. We wouldn't sign you if we didn't get on Prem, innit?
Got a lot to thank you for, superstars.
And then we went and get Ginge. Yeah. We get a nice new
contract.
Yeah, we got all sorts.
Yeah, but we got a few.
I was coming up with assist. I don't know if you remember this. We went to, it was my birthday. We went to QPR.
What was the score?
Yeah, we went to keep you out. We won 2-1. I scored. And
did I give a penalty away?
No. Starab scored. The thing. He came from the bench, cut it in, bang.
Yeah.
They had Julius Caesar in goal, defended like crazy. So we went to keep you out. We won. Following game, Arsenal at home. And that's where I dislocated my shoulder.
Shoulder injury, of course. Yeah.
And then all over again. So I was just, and I was operating from the right. So I need to find it a way to have goals also from the right, because I only had goals from the left, coming from the left and shooting. Now I couldn't come and shoot with my left. So I had to find a way. And then I was just finding that way. And then I got the injury three months out and so forth. So, yeah. So it's a lot of things that condition your day-to-day, your career in general.
Yeah. This is fascinating, like all the things that go on behind the scenes that as a fan you don't really think about. And it's so much of your story hasn't been heard. I wondered, what do you make of West Ham now? Like, we've just won a European trophy, first trophy in 43 years. I mean, with all due respect to the playoff trophy behind. But, I mean, you must still feel a lot of pride about what you achieved at West Ham, because who's to say if we win that trophy in Prague without what you did in that playoff final? Now, do you still feel like that?
Not only me, I think everybody that is part of history, like, for example, Jin, you came, like, West Ham, how is West Ham known? For example, in my time, obviously, through the ages, through maybe 20, 30 years, then West Ham is this iconic club. But my time in England, West Ham is a yo-yo club. That's what I used to call it. Because they're up, they're down. They're up, they're down. They're up, they're down. So to actually establish, it was through those years, right? So if they didn't take part in that, if you don't establish that, you can never reach anywhere. You can never win. You can never be in the European stage. So you need stability. And people took part of those stability. Of course they're important. You can never get to B if you don't go through A. So people... Even to be in where they are today, in the magnitude that they are today, the players they can afford today, something has to be done. A foundation has to be laid before. To say the foundation is not important, you got to be pretty crazy.
Do you still bump into West Ham fans? They still come up to you?
If they see me, it's hard to catch me though.
Just like
just disappeared.
Plane.
Yeah, back to Portugal, disappeared.
I don't have Instagram, I don't have Twitter, I don't have any of that. So if you see me, I'm here today, we talk. I'm very talkative. I like relationship. But if you don't see me, you don't see me.
How does it feel to be back in East London, like here, just round the corner from Upton Park? I guess the last time you were here, you were probably playing for West Ham.
Yeah, I saw the buildings in there. It felt weird, but I'm happy in a sense. I was commenting with one of the boys yesterday. It's hard to move home, because for the fans, this is home. This was home. And a home that they were happy in. It's not, if you're not happy, you can move. But when you are happy, to move home is hard. So I think it took like 2-3 years to settle at the Olympic Park, and now they settle. And it was nice to see. And I'm happy. I think now they can grow to the level that actually I think West Ham should be at. I from the moment I walked to the club, even when we got promoted, I've done so many interviews, and my main, normally I always said West Ham is a top 10 club. It's a top 10 club. Don't mistake it. For the magnitude of the club, forget about it. They need to be higher there. I wasn't going to be there, say top 4, and even now I have to be a bit cautious about it. But I think
you can say top 4 now.
Yeah. I think he has potential to be. Why Chelsea? Why not West Ham?
Yeah,
you see what I'm saying? Yeah, why totally. Arsenal? Why not West Ham?
I think that's, you talk about the move, and obviously it's been spoken about a lot. I think for the site, like as Vaz has mentioned, you know, we saw it, and you know, in the as soon as you come to West Ham, the size of the club. Are you? I don't want to say surprised by how big it's got, because like you said, you could see it, but it has been quite rapid, as in the success not long after me and you were playing, I suppose. Yeah. And are you surprised by that, or did you see it coming?
I wasn't surprised per se, because when I was here, that was always my statement. I remember doing an interview with Gaffer, and they were talking, and what are you going to do this year? You know, I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. But I can only vouch for me. I can tell you, West Ham is a top 10. Mm. West Ham is a top 10. Forget this relegation. And also, that's the mindset. Because West Ham been up and down so much, they think, oh, we're going to fight relegation, you know? Oh, of course, some years it's tough or whatever. But for me, West Ham is a solid top 10. Solid top 10. And then once you establish that, you can move maybe a solid top 6. Once you establish that, you're top 4. And then, but because now, if you make a good buy, you have the right coach. You made a good buy. Brighton challenged things. Aston Villa, a second. Mm. I know Aston Villa has history, of course. But they're second right now. What stops them from staying there? Newcastle United. Okay, I know Newcastle had a story, but not in recent years. But now, you see what I'm saying? Yeah. So if you have this structure, everybody has money. This is one thing about Premier League. Anybody can spend. If you spend right, why not? Yeah. And West Ham has the backing. West Ham packs any stadium. You can put 100,000, make a stadium of 100,000 fans. They'll pack it every game. So they have the capacity.
Yeah. Who's your favorite players? Who's the players you like to watch in the current squad? Someone you see a little bit of your game in, maybe?
Yeah, obviously you got to look at your wingers. I like Bowen a lot. His movements, his straightforward, his dynamic. Obviously, Kudus come in. It's, you know, you gotta. I like Benarama, man. I like the flair.
I was gonna say Benarama, cutting in and letting loose a shot.
You like the, I like the flair. I like the flair. But if I'm honest, though, I think the midfielders they hold that team. Their role is important. Mm-hmm. The way the manager plays. I look at the midfielders. Obviously, I look at the attackers, the breaking forward, the counter-attacking. They're crazy. But I look at the midfielders. I look like a Suchet, is that how you call it?
Yeah, Suchet.
Alvarez. It's amazing. So, obviously, the whole thing. But if you... Naturally, you look at the forwards because they're the ones who score and so forth. But now my mind off the field is I look at the key players, the one that hold things, although they're maybe not in the limelight like your Makaleles at the time, but I can appreciate these players more now.
You're talking like a coach, mate.
Yeah, I was going to say, I overheard you earlier. Are you doing your coaching badges?
I did my UEFA B. I probably would like to do my A just for the knowledge of it. I don't want to be a coach. If I ever was a coach, I don't even think I would be the main guy. I think I'll be a good assistant because I can never be like put up a front like the distant. I like to bond. So I think I could be a good assistant, but that's not the role that I'm taking. I'm taking more the agency role.
Yeah.
So because I like relationship, I like to affect a player on a deeper level, on one-to-one, on shape their thinking. Shape their vision. So, you can't really do that as a coach. So you can go to their houses, they come to your house and you can have a meal, you can, you know, you can't bond like that. One, because they're too many. You have to think about the tactic, the each individual, how to better them, and there's too much work for you. And then you have a family, and then too. But now I just have my family, obviously, and then I have these players to look after, and I'm focusing on young players.
Awesome. Amazing. Great to hear from you. I think if you have a look over the last decade, all West Ham have achieved, and we've talked about the great squad we've got now, you can trace a line right back to that moment you scored the winner in the playoff final and put us back into the Premier League where we've been ever since. So for that, Ricardo, and for the time you've spent with us, thank you. I'm sorry, on behalf of all West Ham fans, you will always be welcome at London Stadium. And what you achieve for us, I think, will live forever. Anyone who was there, witnessed it, who experienced it, will never forget it. So, Ricardo Vazte, welcome back to East London. Hope to see you again soon. Thank you for joining us. And thank you for listening here on Ironcast. Until next time, come on, you Irons.
Podcast Network.